Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
nature better, or developed a stereo sound system with impeccable fidelity. Sound sharper because they're more receptive to high frequencies. So switch to BASF Chrome cassettes for spot-on sound.
just a word is much more fun for two.
Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. What up?
Welcome to Slime Wire, episode 2856. I am your host for the evening, Ike Mansensei. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Triton T2.
What's up? How's it going?
And today we got a couple of topics coming your way. We're going to be talking about the recent slanderous Vaporwave article that was directed at us that did not link Triton T2's Twitter.
Yeah, they didn't link my Twitter. They said that they did, but they did not.
Denying him the fame that he craves. And we're going to be talking about the role of Pat Chennington's involvement in the Vaporwave scene. Is it for the better? Is it for the worst? People hating on him? Is it just... or is it lame? And we're going to be rounding that off with a discussion of
a video
article,
essay.
Video essay about a video essay made by
Video essay about Pat Chennington. And
yeah.
Basically this is an ongoing beef episode about the beef that we have embroiled ourselves in regarding
yes.
the future of Vaporwave, the definition of Vaporwave, and all
yes.
that sort of fun stuff.
We remain embroiled, and we're turning up the heat on this episode. Only putting the grill to higher temps.
Yeah.
So let's just get right into it. We got the story of That's Not Vaporwave, written by a guy that you slandered.
Who wrote it? It's Tom Hoskin, who is a member of Donor Lens, also
yeah.
runs the Future Sounds FM podcast with
yeah.
another person from Donor Lens, as well as somebody from My Pet Flamingo, the record label. We are cool with them, just to be clear at this point.
Yeah.
No real beef, but maybe an ideological beef going on.
Yes. Yeah, we're kind of like North Korea and South Korea at this point with these people. The lines have been drawn, but we are engaging in friendly terms. Nothing. There is a no-fly zone that's been erected, but...
It's like in World War One when it was like the middle of winter, so they just stopped fighting in like the trenches and like started
yeah.
playing like football with each other.
Yeah, yeah, we're having that we're celebrating Christmas with each other moment from that movie. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
yeah. But rest assured, spring is coming, and with it, the culling will begin. but so your original criticism of this guy was that he's his act, his musical act, Donor Lens. They're an analog group. They're using flutes and trombones.
Yeah, and, well, so what I've now learned, basically a lot of people told me to listen to Donor Lens. I've been ambiently aware of them, and I now realize I had listened to them. I just, like, never, like, put the name to, like, the album. But, like, yeah. But I was like, okay, I'll check out Donor Lens and look it up. And I just, like, looked it up on YouTube. And the first thing I saw was a live band performance. And, you know, with the whole, like, how the trajectory of Vaporwave has been going the last few years, I was just like, really? Is this really what people are passing as Vaporwave now? Like, does this really exist? Like, yeah. And, I mean, yeah, I put a tweet that was like, this isn't Vaporwave, LOL. And, yeah, I mean, they took a bit of offense to it.
Yeah. So the guy took a screenshot, put it on this story, or put on this short article that he wrote called...
Well, after that tweet, then there was the Musician's Brain tweet, the whole controversy, multiple episodes of this podcast talking devoted about it, episodes blame. Of their podcast talking about it, you know, the whole thing. Everybody's been involved, everybody's been discussing what Vaporwave is or what hasn't or what it isn't, and it sort of started with, me finding this Donor Lens video and saying, this isn't Vaporwave, LOL.
Yeah. Yes, and so now I would say the complaints of the opposite side in this war have been really summed up by this article, the story of That's Not Vaporwave.
Yeah, very neatly, very, you know, very well.
I will admit, yes, he is I don't think anybody can argue that it's a well-written, reflective essay from a man who obviously knows how to write about culture and knows how to succinctly express his thoughts in the form of a long-form essay.
Understand Vaporwave and its place in the history of, like, music and internet music and stuff like that.
Yes. Unlike some of other articles that we have talked about on this podcast, I remember one of them was the commodification of Vaporwave article that was written by that guy...
The Van Pogham guy?
Yeah. And that was a little bit more unhinged.
Yeah.
This seems like in an alternate universe, this could be on the culture, the front page of the culture section of the Washington Post or the New York Times or something like that.
I think that's what they're going for.
Yeah. So it was very this thoughtful kind of Brooklyn Knight writerly tone, and I do think that he really summed up, you know, those, like, in the opening paragraphs, he really talks about, like, I think sums out a lot of the things that we're saying pretty succinctly.
There are a few things that I think were misinterpreted.
Okay.
So the first paragraph, late this summer, there was an explosion in social media discourse that coincided with the Electronicon 3/Groove Continental events, the production of the Nobody Here documentary film, the release of Death's Dynamic Shroud album Dark Life, and a Twitter user discovering a Donor Lens session where we committed the cardinal sin of playing instruments and singing, and then, yes, he screenshots my original tweet. So the first thing is my discovery of that was not what started the big
beef.
What started it was a series of tweets afterward. But, I mean, that's whatever. But then he continues, beneath many layers of irony and nihilism, the serious point seems to be that Vaporwave has evolved in such a way that the term no longer makes sense, and that it now resembles the kind of commercial product it initially sought to satirize. And I would just like to point out that none of my tweets were beneath layers of irony or nihilism. They were pretty matter-of-fact, to the point, this isn't Vaporwave, this is what Musician's Brain is. I mean, yes, funny, I don't think ironic, and definitely not nihilistic.
Okay. All right. Well, then, let's just continue here. I feel like I'm going to be playing devil's advocate to you And we're gonna get some get your response out of here. So I think
let's just read this entire article.
Sure. Well, we're gonna go paragraph by paragraph. We're gonna do a deep reading.
Yes.
And I think that when he talks about vaporwave in its purest form is a music/art movement that uses samples to express millennial.
That is not the paragraph afterward.
Yeah. No, that's the one that you just talked about, the one beneath the many layers of irony and denialism. The serious point seems to be the vaporwave has evolved in such a way that the term no longer makes sense and that it now resembles the kinds of commercial product it initially sought to satirize. I think we've been through that paragraph.
Okay, and then it starts with, I get it, over the... You skipped that part. You skipped a sentence.
That sentence has nothing to do with the grist.
Okay, sorry. I was following along and I lost my spot because you decided to skip over...
Let's keep on going here. The music that sticks out most closely to this definition is perhaps the most academically interesting and the most fun to write about. People playing instruments and singing happens in every other genre, so it follows that incorporating this makes vaporwave less interesting or something else entirely. So I do think that that's a pretty succinct encapsulation.
Yeah, we've definitely said those things. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then he talks about being a young boy, being a youth himself, and being a purist about various artists and their best music, and troweling allmusic.com for 5-star albums, seeking the purest representations of niche genres, and collecting the classics on CD. And that behavior is kind of cringe.
I don't know if we've talked about this on the pod, but I know I've had this conversation with you before about how I agree with this sentiment. I think that, like, when, as a music fan, if you are just, like, listening to, like, the best albums of all time from, like, a smattering of different genres, it, like, gives you the illusion that you know a lot about music or that you have really good taste, but really, if you only know like a little bit about a bunch of different stuff, there's nothing to like ground you in understanding why something is like good, and so really you're just relying on lists that, you know, journalists have made, and that it's actually like more fun and more rewarding to like know a lot about one thing. Which is how I like to approach music, by getting obsessive about, you know, things like vaporwave. Yeah.
I mean, I would say that your behavior, your way of consuming music, does not par with this, because I think that you have obsessively sought out every last morsel of vaporwave from the internet and have cataloged it and listened to it front to back.
Well, I did, but at the beginning, like probably the first like 5, 6, 7 years of it, yeah, but like I haven't really been paying much attention lately.
Well, it's probably gotten a little bit too big for anybody, any one person to completely
consume.
I mean, I agree with that. I think that what he's gonna say, that it's more interesting and fun to observe, participate in an active scene, even if there's an element of the soap opera or the MMORPG, to the way the story unfurls, to go to gigs, listen to records as they are released, rather than wait for history to sort the texts into a canon. So I get the point that he's making, that it's more interesting, more valid to have a healthy sense of curiosity about stuff that is happening in the now. And I do think that this is also something that I have grappled with, not so much listening to vaporwave, but like reading, when I reading books and being a book guy, there is a temptation to, and I have realized and am actively trying to counter, that I have only been reading books from the past, and I realize that I'm reading, you know, great books, I don't want to call them like great books, but yeah, there is a element of like safety and neuroticism that goes with only trusting stuff that has already been verified as good or canon, or, you know, people have already verified that such and such book is great, so there's no, you're completely safe reading it. Whereas reading, or in this case, listening to stuff that is just coming out, that's where you get, you know, that's where you have a real challenge to interpret something, and you have a real challenge to your own sense of taste to tell whether it's good or not.
Yeah, experiencing art contemporaneously, you face the, you know, you face the problem of, like, is this patrician? You know, is this good?
Yeah.
Or is this going to be proven to be cheap and lame in, like, a year's time? Which, I mean, you know, we've seen that happen. You were a big hyper-pop guy that proved to be terrible.
I made the wrong call on it.
Yeah.
And I'm big enough to admit that.
Yeah.
But, again, it's the, that is where the real burden of being a music criticizer is, because it's truly on your shoulders to interpret something and to say whether it's cool or whether it's lame.
Mm-hmm.
So that point, props to, I think that's a very eloquently stated point that he's making. I'm not sure if it really pertains to the actual argument that we are putting forward here at SlimeWire. So I think going a little forward, he talks, isn't it better to go to gigs, listen to records as they're released, rather than wait for history to sort the text into a canon, to make music the way we want to, and call it vaporwave if we think that it is a useful descriptor, and even if it's a little more than a useful marketing tool? Copyright George Clanton.
Yeah, George Clanton has said that he uses vaporwave as like a marketing
tool
for his music. If you label it vaporwave, you automatically have a fan base.
Even if it's
small, it's growing bigger by the day.
Of course. As an aside, I was also wondering if the soap opera and MMORPG line is
a reference to HKE's
various schizophrenic ramblings.
You know what's funny about that is that he referenced that Grimes had an interview where she referred to music as being like an MMORPG very recently. HKE's been saying all this stuff. And, you know, I mean, I'm sort of an HKE truther. I do think people in the industry are watching him. And I don't doubt for a second that Grimes is keyed into HKE's Twitter.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's definitely a shout-out there, or whatever the reverse of a shout-out is.
Yeah, a reference.
A reference. And we can't go back to 2010, nor should we. Most of the music from that time still exists. Very few of those OG artists sounds like they did a decade ago. The decision to make classic vaporwave was one option amongst many, and is itself now a nostalgic act to many of the old guard. Christ, Skeleton Lipstick, and Luxury Elite, notably, are passionate supporters of newer artists.
Okay, so this is another thing. This is another point that I think is I get a little bit wrong. So, like, we talked to Christ on this show. We interviewed him. Christ told us, you know, that he does not listen to any vaporwave, really. Nowadays. He listens to, like, demos. He has, like, a few artists that he really likes, but he's not listening to most of the new vaporwave coming out. Luxury Elite has done lots of interviews where, I mean, she's definitely, like, a very positive person in the scene that, like, gives a lot of props to artists and stuff, but Luxury Elite has said that she misses, like, the days when it was all sample-based and that she's a little bit of a purist. Skeleton Lipstick has, you know, he fucks with us, and he's definitely said that he's, like, gone through phases where he thinks that vaporwave should be more traditional and phases where, you know, it's whatever you want it to be. So, I mean, it's a bit, I think, using those three artists specifically is, I don't think that's exactly true or correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I definitely would, I think it's interesting that there is ambivalence among some of the bigger guys in the scene, and I think a lot of those guys have a lot less at stake because they're already established, so they're free to have that kind of ambivalence. I do remember Christ talking about being vaguely dissatisfied with the kind of like Funko Popification of like
for sure.
creating tapes and stuff. So yeah, I do think there might be more ambivalence than is expressed here.
And definitely for like big people in the scene, Christ is one of the first people that will say Vaporwave is dying. Like, he said that many, many times.
Of course. Yeah. So I think the evoking some bigger people to back up this viewpoint. I think there is a lot more ambivalence among a lot of people in the scene than is suggested here.
There's also OGs of the scene that, you know, we could point to that share like a similar viewpoint as we do.
Yeah.
So like if we could write the counter essay to this and we could list three names like that are big, you know?
Yeah, that are totally unironically opposed to the new Vaporwave scene.
The Clantonization, yes.
The Clantonization, yes. So I think that the next paragraph is interesting to me, and I think that it is kind of a good point, but it does reflect some of the concerns that you have had about the commodification of Vaporwave and the potential for bad actors to sneak into the scene and commodify it. So he talks about, it's hyperbolic to suggest that anyone has truly entered the commercial world, with the exception of one Super Bowl halftime show director, and no
one is
making...
Obviously he's referring to 10Trix Point Never there. 10Trix Point Never was never a member of the Vaporwave scene, ever.
Yes.
He made Echo Jams, and then people were influenced by that. He's never described his music as Vaporwave. He's never been a part of the scene.
Yes. Okay. Agreed. Bam. Okay.
Moving
point,
on.
Point destroyed. All right. No one is making more than pocket money from streaming royalties. It is or was a myth that artists have cleaned up their act regarding copyright in order to secure Spotify playlist placement.
Okay, hold on. We're going line by line. More than pocket money from streaming royalties. That is also false. There are definitely artists in the Vaporwave scene whose only form of income is Vaporwave. So it's paying their bills. That's more than pocket money.
Okay. Yeah. All right, fair. It is or was a myth that artists have cleaned up their act regarding copyright in order to secure Spotify playlist placement. How do you feel about that one, Triton?
Also false. So not in order... So, okay. So artists have cleaned up their act, maybe not to get Spotify playlist placement. Obviously, there are lots of sample-based songs on the Vaporwave Spotify playlist, which he points out later. But there are a lot of artists that stopped making sample-based music so that they could put more of their music on streaming services that were afraid of getting copyright strikes. This was a big thing a couple of years ago when Haircuts for Men got DMCA'd, and a bunch of people got worried. Dan Mason stopped making sample-based music for that reason. Christ referenced that he saw that was the direction it was going, and he stopped making sample-based music. A lot of these people changed their tunes after nothing really happened, and after the Spotify Vaporwave playlist started, and obviously it became clear that it wasn't going to be a huge deal. But, there were people that did stop making sample-based music specifically so that they could get music on Spotify.
Sure. All right. Well...
This is a particularly hefty paragraph.
Okay, yeah. Point destroyed. Sentence annihilated. Naughty Unclear Music exists in abundance there, though some acts like DDS have recently moved their most egregious examples as a precaution. It must be said that a lot of this critical noise is drummed up by people with their own projects and products to shill. we're all equally tainted by commerce.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. I think that's just an extension of the previous point. So Vaporwave has some unique qualities. It doesn't exist in isolation. It has forefathers, close cousins in Musique Concrete, Tape Music, Dub, Plunderphonics, Chopped and Screwed, and Hauntology, all of which use recorded sound as its raw material.
Yeah, this is the Felix Flutter fucking sentence here.
Yes, this is the Felix Flutter take. I think that is... We've all heard that argument before. Do you have any thoughts on that? I think the next sentence to me is very interesting, and it's another point that we've brought up here.
Obviously, Vaporwave didn't invent sampling. Nobody has ever claimed that it did. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't have any thoughts.
Yeah. So vapor is distinct. So this is I think it's an interesting claim. To say that the thing that distinguishes Vaporwave is mainly because it uses the internet to create and propagate itself and is simultaneously nostalgic and current. I think that first equivocation, Vaporwave is distinct mainly because it uses the internet to create and propagate itself, that's another thing we've talked about on this podcast, and that maybe the main thing about Vaporwave is not so much the sound, the vibe, the ideological content, nor the method of creation as it is the method of propagation, the fact that it is an internet genre. Maybe that's
what it's... I agree with this, but I think I would add in anonymous.
Ah.
I think that's a big part.
Yes. All right. Because that's kind of what I am now... I am now... roughly using that model, the idea that Vaporwave is sort of a distinguished mainly by the fact that it's the first, or maybe not the first, but the main totally
the main like online genre. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that also explains a lot of people that come in and are like, hey, I made this like, I don't know, yeah, like oboe quintet, like classical music thing, and is this Vaporwave? I have it on my Bandcamp here.
Yeah, I tagged it.
Yeah, that means Vaporwave. I do think that is definitely just the fact that that's the space, that's the platform where it's propagating, or that where it comes out. I think that explains a lot of this confusion.
I agree with this. With this part,
yeah.
All of which recorded sound is Robin Faber's singing. Yeah, definitely.
And I think it's simultaneously nostalgic and current. Many ways to do it. Does not have a fixed form. It's a feature.
Vaporwave sort of does have a fixed form. I mean, it definitely did for a while. I mean, there's always been people arguing about what it is, but the reason people argue about what it is because there is a fixed idea of form to it, you know?
For sure.
There's always been people that said it's just slowed down 80 samples. That's why people argue about what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here. So this next paragraph is another thing that I have a contention with. Its practitioners are nearly always expatriates?
Expatriates, yes.
Expatriates from other scenes. Indie scenesters, metalheads, punks, jazz nerds, classical composers, seeking a more suitable community that shares their Catholic tastes. No, I totally disagree with that. Vaporwave was the thing that people online that were not in any music scenes, that didn't know how to make music, decided to join because they said, oh, I can make this. Like, anybody can make this. That's the entire reason it got really, really big. So, like, yes, there are people in the scene, and, like, it was started by people that were actual musicians. Obviously, there are people that are musicians that are in the scene. Donor Lens is, you know, they are part of that group. But, no, that is not, like, how it, like, got started. That is not, like, why it grew to be as big as it is. As big as it is.
Yeah. I'd say that also a lot of these... For most of the existence of Vaporwave, most of these other types of musicians avoided vaporwave like the plague and didn't want to have anything to do with it.
I mean, definitely a lot of them. I mean, going further, with all these kids in the sandpit, it is inevitable that boundaries, no matter how broad, are going to be challenged, especially the apparent edict that you're not supposed to play instruments or sing, even if the resulting music is good. So I would say that, like, similar to what you were saying, that can also be the case because a lot of these people are not experienced in music production at all. So, like, the reason that it's, you know, sounds different coming from other people is because, you know, people, there's no, like, you know, people don't have the same skill set, they're just discovering this stuff. That's why a lot of, like, classic albums sound very differently from each other, because there isn't, like, it's not like a bunch of guitar players playing scales where there's, like, one way to do it that's, like, the right way, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Does that make sense?
I'm not exactly sure if it does. You want to try to rephrase it in some other way?
Okay, so, like, the reason, I mean, you've listened to my first Vaporwave album, right?
And of course.
You were like, this doesn't sound like any Vaporwave I've ever heard.
Yeah.
But, like, I was like, no, this is totally Vaporwave, you know, because that was my, like, interpretation of it, and I didn't know how to make music, and I still don't know how to make music. Mm-hmm. So it ended up sounding not exactly like Vaporwave, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, sure, because there
and a lot of people did that same thing.
Such a broad variety of skill sets that come in, and people that have had, it's like little like African kids that are given like a laptop. They don't know what to do with it, but they eventually
learn there's going to be a different thing coming from each
their own way. You know, yeah. I know what you mean. And part of that ignorance and that that autodidactic learning style results in a very broad, very many, many different interpretations of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just going to finish off this paragraph because I've been reading it so far. Even if the resulting music is good. They've seen all this before, Steve Reich's early tape works being critically preferred to his later pieces that combined tape and classical instruments, emulated tape techniques and notation, interminable debates about what is slash isn't punk, the astonishing vitriol directed at Miles. I don't know anything about any of this shit. I know about Vaporwave. I don't know about, like, all this, like, early
tape. You need to bring Miles Davis into it.
Why are we bringing Miles Davis and Steve Reich into this? I mean, let's just keep it simple. So, I don't know anything about any of that shit. I have no response to it. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a picture which is, maybe, I don't know if it's real or fake. I imagine it's fake, where Drake sends a text to James Ferraro. Yo, what's good, James? Got your info from your people. Hope you don't mind. Yo, Farside Virtual is my jam. Let's connect. And I'd like to point out that James Ferraro also isn't really a member of the Vaporwave scene. He made an album that people are influenced by.
Yeah. So the image has nothing to do with the question at hand. Yeah, I do think that the, again, it's always interesting, like, it seems that when people grasp for some other musical scene to compare Vaporwave to, it's always punk, and this debate that we're having right now is always compared to those interminable debates about what is or isn't punk, and I think it's interesting, because once again, it's like that, I feel like that kind of, I don't know, like, the point that I am always, the thing that I'm always noticing about, like, Vaporwave fans not wanting to think about Vaporwave and wanting it to just be vibes or whatever, it's like totally the opposite of what punk was, where it was people that were so impassioned about it that it was their entire lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's the selling out is like, you know, punk people were calling people out for selling out, like, for decades, you know?
Yeah. And then the thing about that also is that, like, I don't know how you wouldn't agree that, like, the end of that story in the punk scene was the sellouts.
Yeah, it was commodification.
Yeah, they won. And then they created, like, the shittiest music of all time in the 2000s. Made, like, fucking Fall Out Boy and Green Day and all that shit.
I have a soft spot for, like, stuff like
that. Yeah, you might. Yeah, but I don't think that you would... I don't know. I feel like you wouldn't say that it's, like, great. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely not, like... That's the... I don't know. That's another thing. I think a lot of, like, people in Vaporwave that are, like, a lot of people in Vaporwave are big fans of, like, Midwest emo and shit that I think just sounds horrible. So maybe they love Fall Out Boy. I don't know.
Yeah, so this, yeah, so I mean, yeah, that was the end of punk. And then, yeah, it fell off, and now it doesn't even exist as a genre at all anymore. So yeah. I don't understand. It's like, that's which side point. Of history do you want to be on? Okay? like, yes, the reactionaries are like, we're trying to save you all from this sinking ship. So yeah, that's something that I've definitely thought about a lot.
Here, I gotta pee really bad. I'll be right back.
Okay, well, let's take a very short piss break, and we'll be right back.
I'm back whenever you are.
All right, and so we are moving on into the next paragraph. There has been erasure of things that were present from Vaporwave's inception. The compositional, MIDI-heavy, utopian virtual of James Ferraro's Farside Virtual, and even the ironically titled genre-specific experience by Fatima El-Qadari that has become detached from our lore, even though dozens of 2020's Vapor records sound just like it. Vaporwave isn't and never was about simply following the floral shop formula. Great artists like FM Skyline, Eyeliner, and Eventual Infinity belong in this lineage. And I think, yeah, this is another good point, and I think it's a nice paragraph that we can perhaps sharpen our own critical responses on, because I do think that there's... I feel like we've been kind of rope-a-doped by some Vaporwave people... in that your original tweet that garnered such controversy was that musician's brain and making vaporwave with analog instruments,
mm-hmm.
that was the original claim. And
I think that it was bad. I was just like, this is what musician's brain is, and now this is what vaporwave is, and it doesn't make sense to me. It was basically like what I was saying.
And I think that we have been interpreted as being saying that only sample-based vaporwave is real vaporwave, or that only that's the only way to be actual vaporwave, which is, I think, while we should hold a privileged space for sample-based music within vaporwave,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that either you or I would say that something like Blank Banshee, something like these later Death's Dynamic Shroud albums, none of that seems to me
So here's the difference between like a lot of this like new, like that Donor Lens video and something like a MIDI wave album by like FM Skyline, is that like MIDI music fits like the ideological critique of vaporwave, like,
yes,
completely. Like it sounds eerie and detached and soulless and weird. Yes. Like
it's a crude facsimile of real instruments made by a computer.
Yeah,
yeah.
That is very different than playing the guitar, you know.
Yes, yes. So I do think that it's like there is. Like, when we say that something isn't vaporwave, it's not necessarily that it's not sampled. Although, it should be sampled. that's
yeah,
a good.
I mean, that's the better. The better vaporwave is sample yeah. based.
If you can do it, I think you should do it. But
I mean, there should be. You know, I appreciate the MIDI stuff. I'm glad that there's like you know small amounts of artists you know doing it. That yes. stuff's good. Yeah, I fuck with it. But yeah, I mean, that's never been like the base of the genre. That's never been like. It's not like sampled was half of it and the other half was MIDI. It's always been an outlier.
And if MIDI wave came to take over the genre and be the main thing that people were producing, I think we would be just as alarmed.
Yeah, I think it was weird.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, okay, so let's move on from that.
Even sample-free artists in our scene, such as Runners Club 95, engage with sampling and internet culture by using one-shots, loops, presets, and referencing fashion and memes in their titles and artwork in a way that makes them legitimately vaporwave, unlike, say, Glass Animals slapping generic aesthetic visuals onto their bland indie pop music. There really aren't many opportunistic interlopers or boogeyman masqueraders in our scene. Even those at the most indie pop wing either served a legit vapor apprenticeship or have been doing the same thing from the start. Just you wait, brother. We, like, people are yeah. going to come in. Vapor That's what industry. I'm saying.
Vapor industry plants are an
They're
inevitable,
gonna happen.
Inevitability of the scene. I'm not really sure because, I mean, I don't know about that. I'm not quite sure.
That's my prediction.
I think that if... what first needs to happen is that there needs to be money in the scene. And if that comes to pass, then yes. But if that does not come to pass, then I don't think so.
There's already indie rock acts that, I mean, they're not calling themselves vaporwave, but they are, like, using the aesthetic and they're touring with, you know, vaporwave artists. And, you know, their, like, debut album is on Pitchfork and getting a Fantano review. Like, there are already acts that are, like, they're going just to the point where they're not saying that they're vaporwave, but like it's eventually gonna happen.
Yeah. So it's inevitable that there will be disagreements within the community, but that in itself is likely a sign the scene is active and alive. This is where I really...
Okay, really quick, before you get into that, when he says, or have been doing the same thing from the start, and then he references White Woods, there's another group that like people always bring up is Surfing. And like Skeleton Lipstick shared with us in the Discord, you know, his text messages between him and Surfing, where he's trying to get them to sign St. Pepsi to their label. And back in 2013, they're like, we're trying to stay away from the vapor stuff. We're only doing like all original music. So, I mean, musician's brain is not a new thing.
Yeah, it's been around.
That is textbook musician's brain. And I've never liked Surfing. I always thought they were kind of whack, personally.
Yeah.
Other people really love them, whatever.
Yeah, sure. That's interesting. I wonder what has brought about this sudden eagerness to accept vaporwave. I wonder if it's just because there's no longer any money in the indie music scene. People are trying to move over.
I don't know.
Who knows? It's inevitable that there will be disagreements within the community, but that in itself is likely a sign the scene is active and alive. Maybe the shitsters are a necessary part of the ecosystem too. Playing the heel in this kayfabe. Okay, I think that some of our soldiers in the Discord server shared this line, and one of them said it was a good line, that there needs to be shitsters in the ecosystem. And I want to say that this is a trap, okay? It's a trap, and none of our vaporwave brothers should fall for it. It should be a heel. The point is to win. The point of the heel that always
loses. Yeah.
Yes, I don't want anybody to fall for this clever, charming act of poeticism, this clever turn of phrase. The heel loses every time, and we're not the heel, okay? We're the actual guy.
Yeah,
guy
we're not the villains, we're the heroes. You fucking
We're the heroes. Yes, yeah. Yeah, the heel is the one that you think is going to win because they have the popular, they're set up as their winning is an inevitable thing, and then the plucky underdog takes them down. And where do you think we sit? Where do you think we fall on that?
Yeah, we're obviously the plucky underdog compared to the Clantonization of Vaporwave. Come on.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we are a tiny little, a tiny wart on the ass of Vaporwave, and we are fighting to stay alive. Magic and ideological purity for sure. They still mostly exist for us to enjoy. Old timers have memories of the period, and youngins can imagine. See, this is they're trying to bury us, Triton. They're trying to paint us as
bullshit.
Yeah.
Our bubble is not without its faults, and I have long felt it could do with being more critical and less happy clappy at times. Okay, then fuck with us. Like,
agreed. Yes.
Agreed. Ironically, critics like Anthony Fantano and Pitchfork have recently started engaging with us, and specifically the kind of problematic vaporwave adjacent music that initiated this debate in the first place. That's like literally what we're saying. That's what's bad. We don't want Anthony Fantano and Pitchfork to engage with us.
Well, I think that also the fact that they've only started engaging with us because of the kind of discourse that you and I are putting out, Triton. So that's further proof that we're cool.
Well, that's not true. I mean, what he's saying is that Anthony Fantano and Pitchfork are engaging with artists that we wouldn't like. The artists that are problematic in our purest definition of vaporwave, i.e. George Clanton, that's Trout.
Okay, you got me. You're right. Okay, yeah, well, then in that case, that's wrong and bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so main issue with post-lockdown Iowa vaporwave is that the shows tend to take place in the largest cities in the richest countries, excluding
those... This is just this guy's one personal...
This is his grouse.
His personal annoyance that he doesn't live in a cool place. I'm sorry, move to somewhere cool
this
if
is
you
want standard,
to go to the shows.
I think that this is the standard millennial kind of, like, lib socialist critique of any kind of movement, that it's not fair to somebody, that you can't be a part of it because of accessibility issues, it's ableist, you know, that kind of thing. And while that's true, I don't really think, while that might be true, that people can't come to people that are in poorer countries that want
to
come
to the UK. But,
okay.
But, like, I mean, like, you know, okay, what is he, so, like, excluding those in further flung places who previously needed only an internet connection to participate. Well, yeah, but I mean, the people that are throwing the festivals, you can't sell tickets to a festival in a place that isn't New York or LA. Like, that's just how it is, you know.
Much deeper.
That's not a gripe with the community, that's a gripe with, like, just the fact that people live in places
cities
that you don't live in, you know, whatever.
True. I think an interesting claim he's trying to make is it's a broader diversity debate that ties in with anonymity. How often does an intriguingly masked artist, sometimes one with a female name, turn out to be just some bloke from a trendy town? Maybe the real radical...
Again, he uses the trendy town thing. I think this guy just hates New York and L.A.
And this is just a yokel. This is just a hick. Yeah.
I don't live in New York or L.A., so...
Yeah.
I didn't go to Electronicon.
Yeah. Maybe the real radical act in 2022... is to show your face and sing songs.
No.
And I just think that's it's a terrible take.
I disagree completely.
Hard disagree there. I really think that the anonymity thing probably is a lot better for trans artists that want to participate in the scene, but maybe are not necessarily comfortable with showing themselves to an audience of people that might not fuck with them like that, you know? I mean, being an anonymity is always good. It's a thing. And I think that also, to me, the anonymity thing, that ties in with, like, a much broader tendency of the modern internet. Like, the point of the modern internet is to get people to show their real faces, get the accounts tied to a real person, because anonymity bestows power onto the users of the internet, and The lack of anonymity means that you are traceable. It allows the surveillance state to track your actions, and it really does. I'm really not kidding.
I mean, I agree, but I mean, what is it? That doesn't really have to do with vaporwave.
Yeah, well, I think that this is any time that somebody says that it's better to be your real self on the internet.
Yeah, that's
wrong.
False. No, yeah, bad. It should always be an offer.
Yeah, even if not, it's undoubtedly a valid option. And if we think the geography of vaporwave is becoming predictable, it's up to us in other parts of the world to put on our own shows and create our own local scenes. Yeah, in my guys' Wichita LimeWire, I recently made an album called Upload to Me. We're already pushing an hour just on this, so...
Okay, this is the last paragraph, but, yeah. You know, it all ends in a... He's been doing this to me this whole time. He's been like, well, why don't you listen to this album I made? He's trying to trick me into listening to his music. I get it, but it's not going
to
work.
We're not going to review your album, okay? This is kind of sad.
Yeah. I mean, ending it on, whatever. It's a well-written article.
It is great. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that it's a well-written article. Very thoughtful, yeah. And I think the main talent here is being able to encapsulate various strands of Twitter debate and packing them up into this one nice little package, this little pill that you can swallow. Yeah. But you shouldn't swallow the pill.
But also, like, you know, the very, like, nature of an article, you know. Like, when people read articles, they tend to just agree with whatever's in the article.
Yes.
And so, like, that... So there are things in this article that I believe are false.
Sure. I think that also ties into my main, like, thought that I was having when I was reading this, which was, like, yeah, this kind of reflective essay... The reflective posture of thinking things through, you know, drawing connections, critically analyzing discourse to come up with a thoughtful critique, thoughtful take. That is the Washington Post way of doing things. That's a that is a very lame way of doing things. And like, we're not here to
we're shooting from the hip, baby.
Yeah, we
it's all tweets and conversations.
Yeah, exactly. We want things to be more indecipherable, more complex, more strange. We want weirder shit to happen, and we are not interested in reflection. We're only interested in creation. No critiquing, only the creation of the new.
Yes.
Is what we are devoted to here. And yeah, only the flex, only posturing and flexing our muscles and our power. But I really do think that, like, I don't know, that is what I was thinking, is like that, like the idea that we should, I don't know, like
sit down and let's have an adult conversation about this.
Yeah, let's be adults about this. No, you should, your takes should be formed, and then you should throw them into the wind with no previous thought at all.
Stir the pot, you know.
Yeah, exactly. What else? I do think that, like, you know, again, I think that there is something of a fundamental difference in values between what a lot of these people think of as being what art should be or is, and what I think, at least, what I think maybe you agree, is that there is a sort of, like, a lot of these people are trying to preserve a negative liberty of creating music, which is, you should be allowed, as a musician, to create whatever you want, and call it whatever you want without being obstructed by anybody else. And what I want is a positive liberty, which is the freedom to follow something that you believe should exist, or the correct way of doing something without interference, and to follow it and see it through. And so to me, I think that I'm on the side of, there, of course, you can't stop anybody from making any music, and that's not anything that we are trying to do.
Yeah, no, but, definitely not. I'm not stifling anybody's creativity.
But we assert that there is, there are better, there is value. There is some music that's better than others, and there is a direction that should be taken in vaporwave.
Yes, I mean, we don't necessarily know what it is. I mean, in vaporwave, yes, we do know what it is.
We do,
like,
know exactly.
In the grand scheme of music, we probably don't.
No, but within the specific genre, vaporwave, of course we do. And we demand the freedom to complete that that vision.
Yeah.
And
go to war.
Yes. And I think that wrapping up, the serious thing that I do want to say also is that, like, yeah, so you can't stop anybody from making what they want to do. You can't stop anybody from just having some, you know, having a jazz outfit or some ska music and calling it vaporwave, putting it on the internet, sure, whatever. But there is still so much room for stuff that would, that can carry the mantle of vaporwave to expand, and there's still so much within the sound to explore, and I think that I want vaporwave to get huge, of course I do, but I want it to get big on its own terms.
Okay,
yeah, I don't think it should have to change. I think, again, something like Dark Life is like the perfect example of something that's like, this is, I don't see how you could not call it vaporwave, and at the same time, it is more than vaporwave. It transcends vaporwave. It expands the horizon of what vaporwave can be while not, like, you don't even have to think about whether it would be called vaporwave.
Okay,
so,
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, so I think that albums like that prove that there is, like, so much within our, what some people would call narrow definition of vaporwave, there's still so much room to improve or to variate on it. And there should not, it can come without betraying itself.
Yeah, for sure. We've said this many, many, many times. I'd like to say, you know, shouts out to those guys, no vitriol to Donor Lens guys. They're cool, they're fine, what they're doing is fine. I will continue to make fun of musicians, right? I will continue to, you know, write Save Vaporwave on Twitter and stuff.
You know, of course.
I'm going to keep having fun, and, you know, they can have fun doing everything. It's fine.
It's great. Sure. Fine. Fine, I guess. Have it your way.
No, not have it your way. I mean, like, definitely not. But, we're pushing an hour on just this topic alone. We need to get into Pad Channington as well.
Pad Channington. So, Pad Channington, early documentarian of the vaporwave scene, created one of the first vaporwave documentaries. Is that right? Was that...
No,
I mean, there's the Wasx documentary, but he also made one, right?
He's the first vaporwave YouTuber. He obviously, there wasn't a vaporwave YouTuber. He hopped in. He's not like an early member of the scene by any means.
Yes.
He's definitely gotten a lot bigger over the years. I mean, he's been around for a while at this point, but no, he's definitely not like an early, like, adopter or anything.
Creator of explanatory YouTube posts,
video essays, we all know what they are, you know. Originally started as just doing vaporwave, but he's gotten into, like, oh, this is the most brutal album, or this is, like, this crazy Japanese jazz album, you know, like, just video essays about, like, internet popular music.
Sure. There's been a bevy of hate spewed against him.
Yes, Pad Channington hate has been happening. And
yes.
Pad Channington support has also been happening.
Yes, and we were at the forefront of both of those things.
We didn't start it, but yeah.
But we were hating on Pad Channington, or at least
along,
you were.
Yeah, a long time ago. Yes. We have old episodes about it.
I think as far back as 2017.
Oh, yes, I was. I mean, before the show, yes, I was an avid Pat hater since day one.
Yeah, avid Pat hater since day one. Now a video essay about video essays in general, and more specifically Pat Chennington's video essays, has surfaced.
Well, okay, so let's, before we get to that, so basically what the original drama, I believe, didn't even come from somebody within the Vaporwave scene. It was just like a Twitter user that was like, I can't, like, these video thumbnails and titles are so stupid. He's like clearly like a huge musical tourist, doesn't know what he's talking about. It's so cringe. And then Echo Droid, the boy Echo Droid, famous Vaporwave producer, like, quote tweeted it, was like, yeah, Pat Chennington, like, kind of sucks. He sort of, like, run it back and said that he doesn't, like, really have any hate for Pat specifically. I also, like, sure. I mean, I'm sure Pat Chennington's a nice guy. I know that lots of people in the Vaporwave scene know him personally, and he runs events and does things for the community, yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, the basic ideal of, like, a Vaporwave YouTuber, right? Like, that's always been cringe. Like, from day one.
That's true. The idea of a Vaporwave YouTuber is, that's preposterous. And another key factor in the clandestinification of Vaporwave and the Funko Popization of Vaporwave. I think that I don't really have any opinion either way about Pat Chennington, but I do definitely have an opinion about this.
Well, before year. let's hold up first. I'd like to talk a little bit because I do have some thoughts.
Okay, let's go.
Because I recently, like, I was watching the Pat Chennington Electronicon 3 recap video.
Yeah,
I told you to like skim through it, and I realized like a lot of this, like, a lot of the reason that, like, Pat gets a lot of support from, like, members within the Vaporwave scene is that if you look through that recap video, like, it's literally, like, the whole thing is, like, I ran into this guy, and then I ran into this guy, like, I ran into this guy, and then we saw this guy, and, like, it's literally just a recap of, like, him meeting with his various friends within the Vaporwave scene. And, like, I'm not going to be that guy that is like, friendship is lame and bad and antithetical to Vaporwave. it's tempting, but like, at some point, like, I mean, that type of video content, I mean, to me, it's very cringe personally, but like, but I mean, you can have your own opinion about that, whatever. But like, also, like, I mean, maybe I am going to be that guy for a sec because like, the whole, like, anonymous hive mind, like, concept of, like, Vaporwave, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that does get really cheapened when you realize that, like, a large portion of the scene is just, like, IRL friends that, like, meet each other at shows. And that is why Pat Chennington gets, like, a lot of support within the Vaporwave scene, is because a lot of these artists are just personal friends with him.
He's a Vaporwave man about town. Yeah. He's chatting up all of the other artists, and he's
it's unpopular to hate on Pat Chennington because these guys have ramen together before Electronicon and make fun of you, you know, for hating on them.
Yes. And I think it's worth noting that it is possible to establish Vapor relationships outside of friendship. I would say that our relationship is one. I don't know if we would describe it as a friendship, a rivalry.
You and me?
yeah. During our time at Grace Manor, we were.
I mean, we met each other before Vaporwave. We didn't meet through Vaporwave.
Yes, but once Vaporwave was introduced into our friendship, it became something more.
it became sort of a big part of it.
So. I think that, a proper Vapor relationship should be have an element of antagonism to it.
okay.
but anyways,
Yeah, that's my pad thing, is that it's like, it's. I just think it's kind of cringe.
So that's your take on Pad. Yeah, he is, I think, the cheery optimism of a Pad Chennington is kind of what that guy that wrote that article was talking about, and it is a little cringe. I will agree with you there.
There are other, like, I remember when Pad Chennington first started making music, he made a whole video about it. I remember watching it, but he was like, it's the first, like, music I've ever made, and, like, he showed, like, how, oh, like, MF Doom, the way he sampled was he went to a record store and he just, like, looked at the covers that, like, he thought was interesting, and so I did that, and, like, and he went through this whole, like, thing about how he made his first album, and there was, like, controversy about it because he threw, like, him being, like, a figure in the vaporwave scene previously through his videos, he was able to get collaborations from, like, big artists immediately for his first album. And was able to get a vinyl release of his first album immediately, where, you know, a lot of, like, smaller artists, they, like, have to work a lot to, like, get to that point. So, sure. To bring it back to the Vaporwave Industry Plant thing, he, in some ways, was an original Vaporwave Industry Plant, in terms of just, like, having a vinyl release on whatever label did it. I can't remember. I've never listened to his Vaporwave music out of principle because I refuse to listen to it.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Nor have I.
Maybe it's good. Yeah. I don't know. I'll never know.
Yeah. I think there was some other murmurings about how he has kind of become a tastemaker within vapor. A lot of people that have become popular now became popular because they were featured in his videos. So he is...
Oh, yeah. That's another... thing. That's another reason there was Pad controversy, was because a while back he did a video that was like, is this guy the newest celebrity of Vaporwave? And it was a video about his IRL friend that made Vaporwave music.
Yeah, and yeah. So there's a little bit of insider trading going on. There's a little bit of nepotism. I mean, it's not nepotism in any way, but there is kind of gang activities going on.
Yeah,
insiderism.
Sure.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I mean, yeah, I didn't have really an opinion about Pad Chennington other than the fact that he is pretty cringe. He had a video. He had a video about Lamb's Anger, the Mr. Owazo album that I used to really love, and I would say still has formed a broad, like, basis for music that I like. And I still think it's a great album, but. Yeah, he had a video on that, and it was just the cheery optimism of him reviewing this album. It's like, this is not the tone, this is not the way. I wasn't a fan. But I guess that other than that, I'm not strongly predisposed to hate on Pad Chennington or like him.
Okay, and so, yeah, now we can move on to the video essay so that somebody made in response to the hate that Pad Chennington was getting.
Yes, and this is a video essay by, what was his name?
I don't know, man.
I have it here. Yeah, I have it right here. Triple
Beppo. He responded to me on Twitter, too.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Triple Beppo, I believe... This particular review has got 490 views.
That's not very many.
Posted 9 days ago, 80 likes, and I believe the man has 4,060 followers.
Subscribers, you know, on YouTube, yeah.
Yes, doing better than us. And in the content of the video is a kind of like deviant art. Drawing of an anime girl with large breasts.
I think that's called a VTuber.
A VTuber. Okay. Sure. And I couldn't really tease out anything that he was trying to say. In the first section of the video, he's like, is Pad Chennington, or what did he say? do video essays cheapen the, or corrupt the, like, musical genres? The answer is yes. And then later, he talks about how video essays are fine and good, and they actually are a good thing for underground music. Yeah, the whole thing was just awful. It was just terrible.
I mean, the whole thing, ironically here, Felix Flutter had the best take on this. And nobody, his tweet only has one like on Twitter about it. But sure. He said, this is awful. Pat Chennington makes introductory videos on stuff he's into. It's not perfect, but I like this. Whatever, whatever. And then, like, regarding this video, he says, safeguarding your point with the old, I'm serious if you agree with me, and it's a joke if you disagree with me, is spineless. And I have way more respect for someone who sincerely disagrees with me. So that's the whole thing. This guy is, like, under too much irony. It's too, like, it's just dumb. And, yeah. Like, yeah, you can't seriously engage with it because there is this, like, yeah, I'm serious if you disagree. If you disagree, you're stupid, but if you agree, like, you're also stupid thing, you know?
Yeah. Which anyway, yeah, dumb. It's kind of like...
And then he, like, he commented on... Or, I think Echo Droid, like, commented on it and was like, by the way, I don't actually have any, like, hate for Pad, like, yada, 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 like, explained his position. And then he, like, commented on Echo Droid's thing and was like, yeah, bro, you, I can tell, you're full of swag on your shit. You're, like, a, like, it's just, like, just really dumb internet bullshit. Like, yeah, shit.
It was real bad. Oh, oh my god. No, wait. Oh, sorry. I thought my computer was turning off. anyways, I've had some battery issues today, so,
It's alright, it's alright.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was really, he had the total, I don't know, yeah, like, sad boy voice, you know, where he's like, yeah, so anyways, like, I don't know, just like...
Just sounds like somebody I would never, ever want to hang out with.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it just made me really sad in, like, that, like, this is the kind of audience that Vaporwave gets. This is, like, this is kind of probably more average than we think.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
Yeah, the kind of person that really likes Vaporwave, the kind of person that really likes internet culture, you know? Mm-hmm. That is just totally Zoomer, like, fucking... I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just really hated it. I really felt
irony to the point of, like, complete detachment from any form of sincerity at all.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, a complete self-abjection and self-deprecation, but also surrounding that self-deprecation is the, like, total... wanting to get attention on the internet enough to post this video while also denying that he has any opinion about the thing that he's talking about at all, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yes. Surround a self-deprecation surrounded by an incredible grandiosity that anybody wants to hear this.
I mean, so, yeah, video essay on video essay.
Yeah, the video essays on the video essays is real tough. I think it's unfortunate that this, the first example I've seen of a video essay about video essays was made about Pat Chennington and about Vaporwave.
Yeah, it's such, like, the worst timeline type shit, you know?
It is, yeah, it really is. yeah. Yeah, I guess that's really all I had to say about it. It made me feel bad about myself and about my life, because it made me feel bad. Am I like this guy? How similar to this guy am I? Is the act of me comparing myself to this guy, is that the same disease that this guy has? I went down a real rabbit hole, and it was real, real sad.
Well, just to make you feel a little bit better, I mean, before anybody goes, like, how can you make fun of, like, this and Pat Chennington in general, when you have like a, when you're doing a vaporwave podcast or whatever, like, yes, sure, the idea, yeah, it's similar. Yes, you can like make the connection there. The difference is that we're not trying to get anybody into vaporwave at all.
Yes.
That's trying, not the purpose at all.
Yeah. Yeah, we're trying to tamp the flow.
Yeah, and the other thing is we are not like, we are not shrouding ourselves in so many layers of irony that you can't tell what's sincere and what isn't.
And we say
we're,
exactly,
we're very clear about what we think.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're not, no, we're not like that guy at all.
Okay, all right.
Beyond just the fact that we're putting out things talking about vaporwave the on the internet, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess that leaves the music section. If we're done talking about this guy,
sure.
I just don't want to, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about it.
Okay.
So on the docket today, we got a project from...
I didn't listen to any of these things. I just wanted to shout them out.
Really?
Listen to
them? I listened to both of them.
I haven't listened to them.
I had stronger feelings about 16-bit high-definition sounds for your fucking speakers than I did about the Dreamtone Bangers compilation. I guess really all I wanted to talk about the Dreamtone Bangers compilation, I just wanted to ask you some questions.
Okay, go
for it. About the basic concept of Dreamtone, what it is, and but first we're going to cover the Shima 33 / May Catface joint.
The Hex D joint.
I thought it was pretty fire. I think this is a good mashup of vaporwave concepts with Hex D concepts, in that it definitely takes a very vaporwave approach to like sampling and just shamelessly ripping off like chart-topping hits from the 2000s, and just hexing them, you know?
Yeah, fucking them up.
Yeah, and most of the other hexed stuff I've listened to is, like, original productions with that bit crush sound. So I really like that about it. And I just really, I think that more than a lot of, and again, like, the hexed music that I listen to exclusively from the Dismiss Yourself label has all been, I assume, original rap productions that are then drenched with this hexy, hexed bit crush sound. And I think because of that, they want people to actually be listening to their original productions, so they kind of take it easy with the hexed sound, right? They're not exploring the bit crushed, the potential of bit crushing as an effect that you can use, in the same way that reverb has been so explored by not just vaporwave but shoegaze and all these other genres that make heavy use of reverb and use reverb as its own instrument. And I think that this was really cool to listen to all of the different kind of sounds that he gets from imposing various amounts of bit crush onto the tracks. And it really made me excited to listen to what people do with bit crush, like the sound. Because it's really, I don't know, it's like, it's a lot more, it really changes the music much more than other like effects, and much more than other genres where the whole point is to just lazily slather an effect onto a track. Like bit crushing, and really it totally changes the music, and like at different levels of bit crushing something will sound completely different. So yeah, it was just really interesting to listen to. The last track, Save Vaporwave.
Hashtag Save Vaporwave. Thank you, Shima, for making that track.
Yeah, and we will save Vaporwave. That's definitely going to happen. That's on
yes,
our
for sure.
Yeah, and track 5, that feel when you hit 3 vapes at once, big standout. Loving that. Track 7, You're Never Going to Bring Me Down. Love that too. And it's not what you think. It's not the sample that you think it's going to be.
I'll have to listen to it. I haven't listened to it, but
it's really good. Yeah, I think you will. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a harbinger of a new age that I'm really looking forward to.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and so and then the Dreamtone Bangers. Those
yeah,
Dreamtone.
Shout out to the Dreamtone Bangers comp. I contributed a track.
Yeah, so I wanted. I was gonna say my definitely the fave. My favorite song was of course Dreamtone Banger by Trey.
Really?
No, it was good. I was wondering what you did to that, like what effect you were using, like how you were making that frothy sea sound that was on.
Oh,
there.
I'll tell you exactly how I made the track. I took a George Clanton song,
yes.
And I slowed it down,
ooh.
And then I added reverb to it,
ooh.
And then I took a rain sound sample.
Ah.
I put that on top of it, and then I put a phaser on the rain sample. And
wow.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, so you're telling
I
me...
I made
so,
it, and it took, like, less than 10 minutes.
Okay, so let me wrap my head around this. You're saying you slowed it down.
Yes.
And then you put reverb on it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that is... That's just great.
I imagine that's how most of the Dreamtone Banger compilation...
Yes.
Tracks were made, yeah.
Definitely noticing a theme. Some of our buddies, Bosco's on there a couple times. Bosco teaming up with Exiled Punished Sunshine, exiled from, from the SlimeWire Discord, which shout out
to Discord. He just left.
He left. He was bullied out of it. Shout out SlimeWire Discord. Get on there. Everybody get on there. You can bully anyone you want. We will not moderate it. You can say
yeah,
whatever
I
you
truly
want.
Believe in, I'm truly anti-censorship. I spent too long on 4chan growing up to want to like stop anybody from doing or saying anything.
There's probably a lot of people on there that you hate and want to bully, listeners.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is your chance.
It's a melting pot for sure.
Yes. So get on there. But yeah, I really liked the Sunshine track, Living in a Libertarian Chadstopia. I can't read the last part of it, but it was really good. And then, shout outs Bosco, 12-year-old hole is the translation of the Japanese that you put out there.
Yeah,
I bet he didn't want that to be translated, but haha.
No, he definitely did. He, I'll tell you about what that track is later.
Okay. And yeah, I guess my question is, what is a Dreamtone banger?
I think it's like the virtual Dream Plaza thing, where sure. Telepath has one sample that lasts for like 30 minutes. Like sort of Paul Stretch stuff. I think that's what Dreamtone is, but
gotcha.
Dreamtone Banger is just like that, but retarded.
Sure. I was feeling those retarded vibes throughout the project. And
all I'm gonna say my favorite track on it is the last track, When It's Raining, extended, slowed, and reverb version, which is just a 44-minute long sample. Rain.
yeah. I guess that explains that your explanation of Dreamtone explains why there are so many like 13-minute, 45-minute tracks on here.
And so many rain samples.
Yeah. While I did enjoy a lot of the tracks on here, I do feel like I'm being duped by talking about it, because I do feel that the point of it is to be retarded and for people to not listen to it. And he did take
it down.
My track
was obvious. My track is definitely a joke.
Yeah. I liked it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go for it.
I guess that rounds out the culture portion of the podcast here. If you'd like to submit your music for review, please join our Discord server, and if we like what we hear, We might enter.
Yeah, we might, yeah. I'd also like to say, you know, still working on the SlimeWire compilation. It's going great. We've got lots of tracks so far. Waiting on some other people that have said they were going to contribute that haven't sent me their tracks yet. But yeah, it's going to be a great compilation. If you would like to contribute, DM me on Twitter or email a submission to slimewirerecords@gmail.com. Sample-based, classic style only, please.
Yes. Yes.
But we've got some big names on there. You know, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's some pretty big heavy hitters on there for sure.
Yeah.
As well as a lot of new faces. People that there's also people that have just started making music on there.
Yeah. Yeah, so don't let them tell you we don't like new artists, okay?
Yeah.
We're putting them on. All right. Well, I guess that wraps up this episode of the SlimeWire podcast. A big sayonara.
Yeah, sayonara.